Funding for this talk comes from TrialX, connecting patients to clinical trials.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Cure Talks. This is Priya Menon joining you from India, and today we are talking about multiple myeloma. The myeloma panel is led by Gary Peterson, myeloma survivor and editor of myelomasurvival.com and co-host of today's show. Joining Gary on the panel are myeloma survivors and advocates Jack Gaylo, Cynthia Shmulevsky, and Matt Goldman. The featured expert on today's talk is Dr. Ola Landgren, hematologist-oncologist at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. Dr. Landgren, welcome to Cure Talks, and great to have you with us again.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a great honor.
Most multiple myeloma patients, even those in complete response, may show signs of relapse at some point of time. So testing and quantifying minimal residual disease has become essential to obtain better prognostic correlations. Researchers believe that MRD testing could help them compare myeloma therapy strategies, evaluate new treatments faster, and guide treatment decisions. We'll be discussing what MRD testing could mean to your treatment and how MRD testing could become a new and earlier endpoint in myeloma treatment. Before I hand over to Gary, I would like to inform the audience that we will be addressing questions sent in towards the end of the discussion. If you have a question for Dr. Landgren, please email priya@trialx.com or post on Cure Talks website. You can also press 1 on your keypads and we will bring you on air to ask your questions. With that, I will now hand over to Gary to begin with the discussion. Gary, you're on.
Thank you very much, Priya. I really do appreciate the fact that you bring together this group as well as some wonderful experts like Dr. Landgren to help us to educate ourselves, and we certainly do appreciate that. And it happens to be a very much an honor to be able to talk to Dr. Ola Landgren, who is the chief of myeloma service in the Division of Hematology Oncology at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, and the professor of medicine at Weill Cornell Medical College. Previously, Dr. Landgren was the chief of the multiple myeloma section at the National Cancer Institute in the Center for Cancer Research. Dr. Landgren received his doctor degree and PhD at the Karolinska Institute in Stockholm, Sweden. I like the fact that on his bio he writes this, that he's a board-certified hematologist-oncologist whose research focuses on the development of novel treatment strategies in advanced disease monitoring by new minimal residual disease, MRD assays, as well as biological studies focusing on disease and host biology. So in his bio, he basically heads it up with MRD and is very much a believer that MRD is very, very central to the future of myeloma treatment and research. Dr. Landgren also studies the mechanisms and markers of progression from MGUS, smoldering myeloma, systematic myeloma, multiple myeloma, and identification of high-risk precursor patients who might be candidates for earlier treatment. And we have found that if you treat early, you're better off. And so I think you can easily see Dr. Landgren is right at the crux of the future of treatment in multiple myeloma. So, Doctor, thank you so much for being with us today. And we are just so pleased that you've taken time out of your busy schedule in order to help to improve our understanding of MRD and how it might apply. So we have all kinds of different testing. It seems like there's testing for CR, or complete response, then SCR, stringent complete response, and now we have discussing MRD, or minimal residual disease. What are the differences in these tests, and why is there a need for a more sensitive test?
Again, Gary, first of all, I'd like to thank you so much for inviting me, and thank you for those very kind words in the introduction. It's really a great honor. Before I answer your question and go into the details, I really would like to share with you my perspectives. I think the disease, I worked for more than 20 years in the clinical field, and I do think we have come to a point where there may be people that could live with this disease and have maybe the same lifespan as they would have had even if they didn't have the disease. And there may be people that may not have the disease coming back. I'm not saying that we do have yet an established cure. So the disease is difficult. There is an unmet need to develop new therapies. But at the same time, I also want to highlight the fact that there are a lot of new developments that we have not faced before, and we may have new tools in our hands already that can actually make a huge difference. So I'm really excited about that. More work needs to be done. So I want to start off by saying that. Go back to your question, complete response. Why do we need to look beyond complete response? And what is complete response? So in solid tumor world, there are criteria that are used across different diseases, the RECIST criteria, the revised RECIST criteria. In the hematologic diseases, response assessment, that means to evaluate how good the therapy works, is disease dependent. And specifically when it comes to myeloma, the criteria we use are myeloma specific, and that's exactly where this complete response comes from. About 15 or so years ago, people had different opinions on how to assess response. And there were basically as many response criteria as there were investigators. Maybe more than 15 years this was the case. But around 15 years ago or so, people came together and said, let's do some kind of uniform criteria so we can start talking to each other and we can compare the studies. So complete response was in this first joint effort that included U.S. and non-U.S., included all the big cooperative groups, pharma, and academia. And complete response was defined as you deplete the protein in the blood, the monoclonal protein, or if you check the light chains, they have to be normalized. And in addition to that, you do a bone marrow biopsy, and then you look with a microscope, and based on quite arbitrary clinical criteria, the agreement was at the time that if you look in the microscope and less than 5% of the cells are plasma cells, you can now declare complete response. And it was based on the fact that the healthy person would have 1 to 5% plasma cells in the bone marrow. As the therapies have become better over the past 15 years, and I would say the past 5 or so years, very much better, we have started to see that there is a gradient. If you can get rid of the protein with pretty crude measures that we use and have used the whole time, these are part of these complete response criteria. You do the biopsy and you look in the microscope, you depend on the eyes of the pathologist. Although they are very skilled and they use the best microscopes, it's still very hard to see whether there are individual cells. When we talk about like one cell in a few thousand or 100,000 or a million, you cannot see that with your eye. You really need technology to guide you. So as we have started to look into those types of things, we started to see that in patients that we call complete response, there was a gradient. Some people had and some people did not have these residual cells. And most importantly, it's not only an academic question, it's actually clinically relevant, because if you follow people over time, what was found was that patients that were clear in the marrow with these assays, they had a longer progression-free survival than people who had detectable cells. They were both in complete response. So the finding was really that if you look a little bit deeper with more sensitive assays. In some people you find and in other people you don't find, and there is a clinical difference. So, of course, this is really the rationale for moving forward. And there have been development over the past 5 to 10 years. I've probably worked on MOD development for almost 10 years now, and I think we have come a very long way during those years. And I think there is much more work that needs to be done, and I'm happy to talk more about it. But that kind of sets the stage.
Okay. The tests for CR, there was a different criteria, right, that determined whether it was a complete response or a stringent complete response. And then a new test was developed, right, for MRD. So there's different criteria. I think what is the level of testing? I know that some of the MRD testing is like 1 in 100,000 or 1 in 1,000,000. And what is it for CR and SCR? Are there differences there? Are there, you know, how many cells, you know, what the accuracy is for those two tests as well?
Well, so it is a little bit to compare apples with oranges when we say CR, is it one cell in how many versus, for example, a MRD assay of a particular kind of technology. The CR, as I said, it's a patient who had an M spike, and the M spike is no longer detectable in the blood. Okay. And then you do a biopsy, and you have less than 5% plasma cells by the microscope in the bone marrow. These patients do have a complete response by the current criteria, and this is from these criteria I mentioned going back 10, 15 years, and they are still saying the same thing. If you do some estimations and say, how many cells can you still have in the marrow that you actually still couldn't see with a microscope? Basically, what I'm saying here is that where is the sensitivity cutoff in the microscope and with this protein assay? I think probably if you have still, let's say, one cell in 1,000, probably that would not give a band. It would not give a protein in the blood, and you couldn't really see that in the microscope. So something like that.
Yeah.
It's kind of an estimation.
Yeah, I was just trying to get a sense for how much more sensitive the new ones are versus the old ones. And,
so,
and one, you know, because as a patient, they would say to you, you're in a complete response, right? So you're saying to yourself, hey, why should I have any more treatment? You know, I mean, I'm good. You guys got me to where I need to be. But that's not the case with multiple myeloma. Multiple myeloma, there was always some left over in residual lytic lesions or in your marrow that you just couldn't, the current testing didn't show. So I guess that was kind of where I was wondering is how much is the difference between those. So you've explained that quite well. So thank you very much, Doctor.
One thing I would like to add to it, thank you for your response back. One just for clarification additionally. So the criteria, the way they are written is that the complete response implies that you cannot have the M spike and you have to have less than 5%. If you are light chain only secreting myeloma, the ratio has to be normalized. And again, you have to have less than 5%. Only in people who are in a complete response do the criteria refer to MRD positive MRD negative. So you have to be in complete response, and then you check and you cannot find any cells with these sensitive assays. Then you can declare MRD negativity. If you just arbitrarily were to run that test, was done in a person who had flaming disease, even if the results came back negative, it would still be viewed as not MRD negative. It probably would be reviewed as some kind of a sampling error. you need to be in complete response in order to talk about MRD negativity, just to be clear about that.
Okay. That sounds good. Back when I was first diagnosed some 11 years ago, I had heard that there was some work being done in Europe on improved testing, and I thought it was MRD at the time. And, you know, but it never came, over here till much later. And why does it seem that it's only become important just in the last several years?
So I do think that, like most things in life, it's all about being at the right place at the right time. And I think the MRD development in myeloma came in the 1990s, and they were developed in the UK. They had very rudimentary assays at the time, but most importantly, the drugs were not that good. So if you have inferior drugs, it really makes not the big difference if you check, even if you could find or not find any residual cells with weak MRD assays. Most people had a lot of disease still in the bone marrow at the time. So people felt this is kind of, it's not clinically relevant, it's kind of a research project. Not until the assays became more sensitive and people could identify patients who actually were negative at the high sensitivity rate. You could say we look through 50 or 100,000 cells here and we couldn't find any. Then people started seeing differences in outcome. But I think what was holding back the European landscape for treatment, and it still is really the access to the drugs. So really, I think Europe started off early with weak MRD assays, with weak treatments. Europe moved forward with better MRD assays. The treatments were still less good. The U.S. absorbed these ideas and then moved forward with better MRD assays. And we have much better therapies. We have access to much more modern drugs here. So it makes much more sense for people that have access to all these new drugs to really look with very sensitive assays. So I think kind of a multi-step process. As things are advancing, ideally, the entire world would have access to all these modern drugs, and then it would be relevant to have these sensitive assays, of course, to look deeper and deeper. That kind of puts it a little bit more in context, I guess.
So the drugs just weren't good enough at the
Correct.
Time to warrant a deeper test, because you just couldn't get a good enough response.
Right.
There's been recent studies which have showed patients who achieved MRD negative status were still experiencing progression-free survival, and this is with or without stem cell transplant. However, the ones with stem cell transplant achieved MRD negative at a rate of twice that of the non-transplant group. Can you discuss these results and their significance?
Can you please repeat the question?
Sure. There's recently been some studies with MRD with using induction treatments and then also induction with stem cell transplant. And it was my understanding that if you are an MRD negative, they continue to have progression-free survival in both groups, transplant versus no transplant, if they're MRD negative. However, the MRD negative group was twice as large, meaning a higher percentage by a factor of two than that of the non-transplant group. I was just wondering if you could discuss those results and the significance of that of those trials.
Yeah, so I think that really is a bold move forward for the whole treatment field. Those types of studies that are not only addressing the fact that there could be people that are MRD negative, but to also see how different treatments could kind of work together with MRD results. So as you pointed out, in this study that was published in the New England Journal of Medicine this spring, patients were treated with combination therapy followed by a transplant. They were checked for MRD status, put on 1 year of maintenance with Revlimid. And on the other treatment arm, they got combination therapy and they did not get transplant. They did this test for MRD and then the same 1 year of maintenance. And as you pointed out, there were more people reaching MRD negativity in the arm the transplant was given. But when they have done sub-analysis, it seems that the progression-free survival is very similar in those patients that are MRD negative, independent of how they were treated. There are similar data coming out in the relapse setting. There are patients treated with a new monoclonal antibody, Darzalex, and Revlimid dexamethasone, that were relapsed. They had 1 to 3 prior lines of therapy, and that study showed that 25% of those patients, about, were MRD negative, one cell in 100,000. These are patients that are relapsed after 1 to 3 prior lines of therapy. And then they compared in this randomized study to patients who only received Revlimid dexamethasone. So this was randomized between Darzalex and RevDex versus Revlimid dex alone. In the two drug combination, only about 5% of patients were MRD negative with the same sensitivity. Similar to this study with transplants, this study showed very similar progression-free survival for those patients that were MRD negative in both the two arms. There was really very little difference. So really, it raises the question, could MRD be the most important prognostic factor? And could MRD be more important than the treatment? So if you reach MRD negativity, is that kind of all that really matters? So if you do that without very toxic therapy, maybe you can save those therapies for later if you really need them. And I think that's kind of where the field is right now.
Well, that sounds very exciting. That's really the next question is, would you tell us where you believe MRD will help in treatment decisions and advancing the science and how we conduct clinical trials?
I think that there are so many questions that are on the table. So could you guide treatment? Could you step down in intensity in a person who is MRD negative? Could you equally, if you monitor a person over time, if, God forbid, MRD negative turns MRD positive, would that be a justification to initiate early retreatment? So these are questions that have not really been fully addressed in large studies, but I think they really need to be addressed, and we need to know the answer soon. So these are examples that kind of link the therapy into the MRD results.
Right. And as I tell you, it's a brave new world based on your initiative and a lot of your work with regard to this. So we are so appreciative of everything that you've done. What I'd like to do now is open it up for questions from the panel. And Jack, are you online?
I am. Nice talking to you, Gary, and always nice
All
talking
right,
to you.
Jack.
Nice talking to you, Dr. Langren. My first question actually originates from Dr. Raj Kumar, who's both said and written regarding MRD in myeloma. He'll say, can it be used as a progression marker? Yes. Can it be used to make treatment decisions? No. Can it be used as a surrogate endpoint in trials? No. He further says, or I guess I wrote, we need data for both the second and third questions. And so my question is, can you share some trials we have in place that are gathering data? Because at this time, when patients ask to get MRD testing, doctors will basically say, well, we don't really know what to do with the results. So maybe there are patients listening that can be qualified and decide to sign up for any of these MRD trials that might be available and answer those questions. Everyone still there?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah.
Oh. Is Dr. Langren there? Was that?
Yes, I am. That was a technical delay. I didn't hear, and then I came back again. I don't know. That was some technological problem, I'm sure.
Oh, sorry about that. I don't know. Did you get to hear my question? It was pretty long-winded.
Yeah, you asked me whether there are data. Can you just repeat it again so I'm sure,
sure.
I hear the whole question?
Sure. I'll shorten it down. Are there clinical trials currently in place that are gathering data so that we can use MRD to both make treatment decisions as well as use MRD as a surrogate marker in clinical trials to hasten those trials? And specifically, I mean, if there are these trials, maybe there are patients listening that we can advise them to check out, and maybe they can be part of those data sets.
Yeah, so we do have at our institution a trial where we, for example, give a certain number of cycles based on the MRD results. So a patient who is being treated and reaches MRD negative, we give two more cycles of treatment, and then we will stop the combination therapy. So some patients could end up receiving fewer cycles, while other patients may end up getting more cycles. We also do have trials where we are monitoring patients on maintenance therapy, and if they are MRD negative, and then they eventually become MRD positive over time, to treat for a brief period of time with additional therapy to revert back the MRD to MRD negativity and follow over time to see if that can prevent a clinical relapse. There are other studies elsewhere. I cannot give you a full list of all the trials, but these are examples of ongoing studies that we do have.
The trials at Memorial Sloan Kettering, can I actually go to the website and find those trials on your website?
So we do have all our open trials on our website and clinicaltrial.gov, which is a very difficult database, unfortunately, but that trial does have all our trials also, but we have on our website. And there are other groups, depending on people, where people live, there should be other trials going on along these lines as well. And I think this is going to continue to evolve.
Can you tell me, my second question is kind of, well, I wrote it very succinctly, which is better, next-generation sequencing or next-generation flow? But maybe you can expand the answer to kind of compare those two methods.
Well, so like most things in life, people tend to like their own inventions more than others. So I think if you ask the people who did the flow, they probably tell you the flow is better, and the sequencing people, they like their technology better. So I don't want to kind of make anyone upset or step on other people's toes and make people emotionally sad. If we just look at the strengths and weaknesses, the factual strengths and weaknesses, flow cytometry results can be turned around relatively quickly. Probably have the results within 24 hours. So that's pretty good. The sequencing takes a little bit longer. If streamlined in the current setting, probably could be turned around in a week. That could probably be optimized, but will take some time and effort for institutions to do that. But technically, probably could be done within the week. When it comes to sensitivity, flow cytometry theoretically probably can find one cell in 100,000 if done really the best way. sequencing, I would think can probably find one cell in a million, maybe one cell in 10 million. So it is more sensitive. Data suggests that there is a difference in progression-free survival in people who are positive with one cell in a million. So I guess that would argue that sequencing, for that matter, is clinically more relevant. When it comes to cost in the U.S., I would say that they are probably equally expensive. The price that people talk about and say that antibodies are cheap for flow, that is true, but you set everything up and pay the salary for the technician and things like that, make those two tests probably equal in terms of cost. I think the fact that you need to do fresh samples for flow cytometry is a weakness. The sequencing, you can store samples and you can run them in a batch. So that's important if you run an operation. You only can do fresh samples. You have to have people ready at all times to take care of the samples. And there are other aspects also. So you ask me which is better. I leave it up to the interpreter to say which is better, but I gave you some of the high points there.
Thank you for clarifying. Can I just ask, for the MRD trials at Memorial, are you using flow or sequencing?
We do both.
Oh, okay.
So what we have done, we have set up sequencing at our institution, and we also have set up a flow cytometry MRD lab. So we do both.
Thank you very much, Dr. Langren. That's it for me, Gary.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Jack. Cindy, are you online? Your
questions? I am. I'm here.
Okay.
It's always a pleasure listening to you, Dr. Langren. And thank you for spending time educating us tonight. And my questions are, the first one is, I know the goal of treatment and everyone wants to get to MRD negativity. And for the most part, I think that's what everyone wants. But I've also read that there's a small portion of patients out there who will never get to that CR, let alone MRD negativity, but they're doing very well. Right now, I want to know a couple things. Are there any trials studying the genetic signatures of those patients who never reach a CR but continue to do well for a long term? And in your opinion, with that group of patients there, do you think that they should try a more aggressive approach to try to get to MRD negativity? And finally, is there any reason to test MRD if you have a measurable M spike?
These are really good questions. So there are some people that have a disease that does not really go down to zero, even when you check the blood. You could have an M spike, or there are people that are MRD positive. They have no M spike, you check, and they are MRD positive. If you follow these individuals over time, many of these individuals just continue to have the same number, same level over time. No one gets sick from having these markers in the blood or in the bone marrow. It's when the disease becomes active that the problem needs to be taken care of. So I sometimes say to patients who have this that this is just your zero. Your number zero is not zero. It may be 0.1 or something, but it has been 0.1 for a very long time. So let's think about this as your number zero. It would not be right with the current treatments we have available to just throw everything on a person in terms of treatment to get down to zero, because the person will be very sick. And if the person is feeling well and it just sits still, it would only be to change a number on a piece of paper. So that has to be wrong. And that's also what all the guidelines and all the textbooks would say. If there was a drug, or if there were many drugs that could remove those last cells and the drugs were not toxic really, or the toxicity was limited or just for a short course, it would be relevant to see whether you could drive that down if that made a clinical difference. But for right now, we don't really know that. You ask if you can check in people who are not in a CR. You certainly can do that. So really, these MRD tools, they are not magical. They are just a more sophisticated way of quantifying disease than the protein markers are in the blood. So the protein markers, they depend on plasma cells that are abnormal, myeloma cells that release proteins. And the proteins have to be of a certain size, a certain volume concentration in order for these assays to pick them up. The blood assays are not very sensitive. The MRD assays are more sensitive. So, of course, one could do a MRD assay in the bone marrow in a person who has proteins in the blood. And you could use that as a tool to quantify, for example, the number of cells or the number of DNA copies you find. I'm not sure that it would really be clinically useful. We don't really know whether the number of copies or the number of cells have any implications. So for right now, this is an area where we don't know the answer. I think for that reason, I would not recommend doing it because it would not really add or change clinical care. It may change with research, but for right now, there is no way to guide us.
Okay, great. That answers some of my questions there. The second thing, I've heard a lot of things about liquid biopsies in the news, and I think I even heard someplace that there might be some liquid biopsies in myeloma to test for MRD. Do you know anything about that? And if you do, can you give us an update?
Excuse me, it was actually clipping. Could you kindly repeat the question again? I'm sorry.
That's okay. I was talking about liquid biopsies. Instead of doing a bone marrow biopsy, using a biopsy from your circulating tumor cells, is that being looked at in myeloma, and is it being looked at for MRD testing?
Yeah, so at this point, there is no validated assay that can be used in the blood or urine or elsewhere that has the same precision, reproducibility as these bone marrow assays do. So unfortunately, that is not currently available. There is a lot of research going on. People have tried to do, for example, circulating cells in the blood. They have looked for free DNA could be released by these cells in the blood, and also looking for proteins that could be released by these cells. All those are different types of examples of biomarkers. So we and others have been and are working on it. There are a lot of challenges. I can tell you from our experience in our development research lab, the amount of DNA that we can pick up in the blood is much lower than the amount of DNA that we can pick up in the bone marrow. So if you have a person who is treated with only a few cycles of therapy, when you take out, let's say, one or two blood tubes of blood, there may not be any residual DNA in the blood. So that test is not good enough. It's not sensitive enough. If you do a biopsy, you may still find DNA there, and the blood is negative. So it gives you false negative results. We are trying to see if we can use proteins as markers, and we have some early preliminary results suggesting that maybe more sensitive protein analysis potentially could be either equally sensitive, or they could potentially be as a stepwise approach. So you do, for example, the blood test with these proteins. These are much smaller proteins than the conventional M-spikes and IFEs and light chains. There are other types of proteins I'm talking about that we run with mass spec machines. So maybe if a person is still positive, to not do the biopsy. But if the person turns negative, maybe a biopsy could be done then. So it could be a kind of a two-step approach to spare people from doing it if there is kind of evidence that there already is disease.
Okay.
Ideally, these tests could replace the whole business of biopsies. And the last thing I can tell you also is that we are also investigating something called immunoPET. So we are trying to see if we can have some labeled tracers that we can give in the PET machine to see if we can even see the disease with a PET machine.
Oh, okay.
So that would be another way of doing it.
So MRD using an imaging machine instead of your blood or bone marrow. Is that correct?
So these are things, yeah, so that, those are things that we are investigating. All these things, we probably need another, I don't know, 1 or 2 years to fully assess it. We probably will be able to do these immunopets by the end of this year. We have done a lot of experiments in our research lab, and we have very, very strong data that this could work, but it needs to be tested formally in the clinic.
And that would be for myeloma or just myeloma or for other cancers also?
Everything I talk about today is only focusing on myeloma.
We have
a lot of other research going for a lot of other diseases, but what I talk about today is only focusing on myeloma.
That's what I figured. Okay. My last question is about insurance paying for MRD testing outside of a clinical trial. Do people test for MRD outside of a clinical trial? And if they do you have any idea whether the insurance companies are paying for this? And should patients request their MRD testing done outside of the trial now? Or as Jack said earlier, there's really not much to know what to do with those results if they get them. So
I think these are, again, all the questions you ask and all the others are really, really good. So what's the deal with this insurance coverage for MRD tests? So the insurance companies, they would cover a workup of the bone marrow with immunohistochemistry and also with flow cytometry to determine clonality and immunophenotypic characterization. So at our institution, what we have done is that we have used the flow cytometry characterization and have really improved the way that's done. And we have taken it all the way into an MRD assay. So our institution would charge for the conventional flow cytometry assay, which would have been done anyway, but then we do all the MRD. So I guess you could say that the institution has kind of absorbed both the development costs and also the additional time it takes. But we believe that this is very important. And we think this is part of our mission as a leading center to help the field forward and to give our patients the best possible care. So we do MRD as our standard of care. You could say partly at our expense, but we would charge the insurance for what would have been charged anyway for flow. But it comes to sequencing, there is no FDA-approved assay at this time. So technically how it would work is that an institution can develop a sequencing assay in the lab that has been developed by some technology company. And if they file within the state and they get approval, for example, for us, New York, we could file to New York State and or the company that has the assay. And if that's approved, then we could use it. Now, that would be an issue between the individual patient's insurance company and the institution, whether they think that is of value or not. So that's obviously a lot of work. It would be all the 50 states. So the best scenario would be if the companies that have these assays instead take them to the FDA and get them FDA approved. Because if an assay is FDA approved, that means that it's also covered for reimbursement. So the best sequencing assay that has been presented so far, the adaptive 2.0 assay, is currently under FDA review, and it's anticipated to be approved probably in 6 to 12 months or so. That would be a huge step forward here in the United States.
Well, hopefully it gets done.
Yes.
Okay, Gary, that's all my questions. You can move on.
Well, thank you very much, Cindy. And Matt Goldman, are you on the line?
Yes, sir. Hello, Gary. Good evening, everybody, and thanks, Doctor.
Hey, Matt, how you doing? How's retirement?
It is fantastic. Thanks for asking.
Fantastic. All right,
I'm
your
questions. Okay, doctor, all the other questions were good. Now, hopefully mine are as well. I'm not sure. With a bone marrow biopsy, how is there, you know, it's not a person's favorite thing to do. So if a person is going to keep doing treatment and keep doing maintenance, is there a better or worse time, or is there a time where it's not even necessary to have a biopsy and just say that I'm at a good enough stage and leave it at that?
Well, I think that's another great question. So when is the right time to do the marrows? They are not so fun. They hurt and it's invasive and all those things. So the guidelines say that the patient who has been initiated with combination therapy, worked up for complete response, if that sample is now being sent for MRD testing and it's negative, the guideline doesn't really tell that you need to do more marrows after that. The guidelines say that if a marrow is done, at, say, 1 or 2 or 3 or 5 or whatever years later, you could use the terminology MRD negative 5-year follow-up or MRD negative 8-year follow-up or whatever year follow-up. But the guideline doesn't really say that you must or should do bone marrows at certain time points. So it's a clinical judgment call. So what do we do at our institution? So we are trying to understand what's the meaningfulness doing these things. So instead of just doing one patient here, one patient there, we trying to collect all the data. So we have one study where we follow people on maintenance. It's a research protocol. It's the same Revlimid that you would get as standard of care. But we actually do monitoring for both MRD, and we study the bone marrow microenvironment and also the microbiota, the flora in the gut. And we do testing with bone marrow once a year on this study. And we collect blood samples every 3 months. A little extra volume is being collected, allowing us to do a lot of microenvironment assays. And these are blood tests every 3 months. So the bone marrow is only once a year. And we also collect a little bit of stool in order to study the flora in the gut. So we have more than 100 patients we are following. And the study is intended to go for at least 5 years. So with 100 people followed in very, very careful manner, we hope that this will be a study that can help answering these questions. We are about halfway into this study, so probably in another 2-3 years, we should have those results available, and we will, of course, share that with everybody.
Okay, thanks. And to clarify what you were saying earlier in terms of saving some of the heavy-hitting drugs, you know, you achieve MRD and you can save some of the heavier drugs for later. So are you saying that if you hit MRD that you can be off of drugs completely for a while and you just watch, or are you just on a low dose of something and that's what you're doing?
There are more questions than there are answers at this time, and now you're kind of pushing the envelope here into the area of the unknown. Mm-hmm. What can you save for later? You can envision a scenario, a person has been MRD negative with an assay 10 to one cell in a million, 10 to minus 6, let's say for 5 years. The person is doing fine. There is no sign of anything. Could that person go off treatment? The answer is, at this point, we don't know. Of course, you can go off, but do we know that's the best thing to do? That we don't know. I have actually a lot of people that have been MRD negative to that degree that come to me, and they ask me this question. And when I say there is no formal data, some people tell me that's what I'm going to do. So those people that do that, they go off treatment, they come, and many of these people are being monitored with biopsies every 6 to 12 months. This is ongoing, and we don't know if MRD will revert back in these individuals or not. So again, I don't know. If that were to happen, God forbid, that the disease came back, if you retreated it early on, could you revert it back and it would make no difference? I don't know. There is no data. So again, coming back to this study, I'm mentioning having a longitudinal series of people treated with maintenance, where we do all these assays, would be the only way to address these questions in a systematic manner. So here's what we have done overall. We have really thought about all these questions from a clinical perspective, from our experience. And what we do is that we do, for every newly diagnosed patient, we now have started sequencing every patient as our standard of care. So we do sequencing of all the bone marrow assays, and there is no billing for that, so we are absorbing all those costs. We are treating people, and we do biopsies, and we do these MOD assays, as I try to outline. And we are absorbing many of these costs just so we can capture the data. For people who are monitored longitudinally on maintenance, if they go on this study, then we will learn from that study also. So I guess if you think of this as a platform for looking into the future, there are a lot of things that you can actually try to address once you have a little bit more follow-up from where we are right now. I think we will be able to see whether people who are MRD negative, who have certain sequencing signatures at baseline, maybe the MRD negativity is more important than in others. Maybe if you have a certain signature and you turn MRD negative, maybe then you're more likely to not have the disease coming back or not coming back in a very long time. Unfortunately, there could probably be some people where the signature of the disease is such that it indicates that it's a more aggressive biology. And although MRD negativity is achieved, maybe the disease has features that go beyond that. So these are gradients that we're looking into, or nuances that we're looking into. We're also capturing if the person, God forbid, were to relapse, capture those cells and sequence those cells and go back and compare those with the baseline sample to see if those cells actually were there from the beginning. And if so, is there a way to make sure that those cells actually go away if we were to see them in another patient in the future? So we kind of get rid of those cells so we don't want to see them again in future patients. And right now, these are questions that we don't have the formal answers. Mm-hmm. So we're trying in a very systematic manner to go after these questions.
So thanks for that. So if you have a patient that comes to you and says they want to go drug-free for a while, is your general recommendation to stay on something, or, you know, how do you, or you just sort of lay out the options for the patient and let them decide? How do you deal with that?
So in my practice, I see very many patients myself, and we have a pretty big program at this point. We probably cover about 15 to 20% of the New York tri-state area. We are about a catchment area of about 3 to 4 million population. So we have a pretty busy program at this time. If people come and ask us, we are we try to be very transparent. So we say that these are questions where there are no formal answers to from randomized studies, but this is our recommendation. So when it comes to the maintenance question, we would say that the data from pooled meta-analysis suggests that continued treatment has a longer progression-free survival, and also there is from one meta-analysis evidence of longer overall survival. Now, if you were to stratify patients that are MRD negative, positive over a very long period of time, do the same answer apply? That's where the question has no known formal answer. So we would say that the best we can say is that you can continue based on the meta-analysis. If you choose to go off, we are happy to continue monitoring you. So we will do that kind of on a case-by-case basis. For right now, we would recommend going forward with continued treatment.
Okay. Thanks. Gary,
all right.
That's all
Thank
I have.
Matt. Yeah, thanks a lot, Matt. Very good. Appreciate your inputs. Priya, we can go now to the callers. Could you see if there's some callers online? We've got a number of questions.
Yes, Gary, we've received quite a few questions from our listeners.
And doctor, I will just read them out so you can just address them. The first question is, do you expect blood biopsies to resolve the issue of sample bias with the BMB? And if so, when will that be used in clinical trials?
I do think that that probably will happen. It's hard, of course, to know exactly when these assays could become implemented in clinical practice. We are already working on our clinical trials for newly diagnosed patients. We already have this going at this point at our institution. And I think there are other institutions as well. But we are not using them for clinical decision-making because they have not been validated. So they are what's called exploratory biomarkers. But I do think when these trials will be completed, let's say in a year or 1 to 2 years from now, then we can compare those results with all the other MRD assays that I was talking about. And also with the immunopath MRD assays. So basically, our approach is to have a very comprehensive program with cell assays, immunophenotyping with flow, sequencing, proteomics, and immunopath to see which is the winner, where do we want to go in the future. So we have everything lined up and we do everything in parallel. Maybe in 5 years it could become clinical reality in a broader scale, but that's just a guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, talking about sample bias with the BMB, there's another question sent in by Dana Holmes and Bonnie Faldo here. She wants to know how BMB sample bias affects MRD testing. And because she says, I believe a little to the right or left of a sample could grab MRD positive cells if they're present. And so how do they overcome this?
Well, so I think there are two fundamentally different ways of looking at that very question. So one is to say, although we know that there is, and theoretically there is, and practically there is, the risk of sampling bias, meaning that where you put the needle, there may or may not be cells, while there could be cells elsewhere. Although that's the fact, studies show that if you work people up and you declare people MRD negative, although that could be a few fold negative, on average, those people have longer progression-free and longer overall survival than people who are MRD positive. So on a statistical note, MRD negativity matters. That's just a fact. And meta-analysis show that. If we are thinking of MRD as a bridge into the future where we are trying to seek the cure for this disease, which we, of course, try to do, then we don't want to have any false negative. We need to find those last cells and get rid of them. So if that's what it's all about, then all these biopsies are probably, with current technologies we have access to, probably inherently flawed. I think we need to get out of the bone marrow biopsy and go into either immunopath or into blood or urine-based assays. That's what I think has to happen. It's possible that could be new assays or new ways to approach the marrow that could change that. But for right now, that's going to be a problem. Now, if you have a person who has a disease that is very sensitive to therapy and you give the best possible therapy you have, you could envision that already in the current era, that could be some people where the disease could be depleted with that best therapy. And although you could speculate that there is a potential for false negative, it is still possible that there could be people where the disease does not come back. And that's kind of where I started off saying that we start seeing these fantastic deep responses in people, and it lasts for very, very many years. We have treated patients. I treated patients almost 10 years back on some of these early treatment trials we developed at the NCI that remain MRD negative. Where is that going to take us? Another 5-10 years out, what does that mean? Does that mean that the disease will never come back, or that is very low likelihood? I don't know. But I think it's just it's just amazing to see that. We don't have very, very many patients like that, but there are some patients that have had MRD negativity for a long time now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there have been a couple of questions on clinical trials, which I think you've addressed, saying that they can check out MSKC's website, clinical trial site, and get the trials which are going on. I'll just wrap up with the last question. It's almost time. The question is, after my first year's treatment in a clinical trial ending this April and brought my stage 3 high-risk myeloma into SCR, an MRD test was performed. I was disappointed to learn that they couldn't use the MRD results. There was either a problem with the sample or the test. Is MRD an important enough tool that I should get it done again soon, perhaps at another center? That's the question.
Well, so I think that's another great question. So what do we tell these patients who want us this? So I think it very much depends on the individual. So if the person really want to know, I think the answer to that person is, I think you should consider doing a biopsy. You can do an MRD test, and you would know what your results are. If you're negative, then you can tie into what we have been talking about here today. If you feel like the pain of the biopsy is not really in line with what you want to do, I think another way of thinking about it is that if you feel well, if all the other labs are negative and there is really no sign of any disease, probably not wrong to not do that biopsy and be followed. And I guess you could say, as I mentioned before, you can always recheck a marrow after a year or so. It's not supported by all the guidelines that you have to do that. I mentioned that before, but we do it on research protocols. And for some individual patients, like this example, we would probably do that biopsy if the patient wanted to do that, and we would then have a confirmation that the marrow remains to be negative, and we could run the MRD test. I think that could be another way. I guess you could also argue and say that if the patient is feeling fine, there is really no way at all doing it. So for those who believe in that, that's not wrong either. I think my recommendation would probably be the number 2 out of these 3. But if the patient felt that he or she really wanted to do it, we would be willing to do it.
Dr. Langdon, thank you so very much. I think that has been a very, very comprehensive and detailed presentation and talk about MRD testing. And I hope you share a lot of information with our audience. So thank you very much for your time and for all the information as well. Gary, Jack, Cindy, and Matt, thank you so much for your participation. The excellent questions that brought out all the information that we wanted to share. And the talk will be available on CureTalks website. Please visit curetalks.com for details on upcoming talks. Thank you very much, everyone. Have a good evening.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Doctor.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.